okay? So
did anyone check the bylaws to see if we had a set time? We talked about that.
Through the chair, Debbie Chamberlain had me look up in Laserfish. We have, back in 2002, they changed the city council meeting, I believe, from 6 to 7. So I think Debbie's going to have to probably do a little staff report to, you know, to bring it before council.
Okay.
But yeah, she did mention it to Phil, and I know she's working on it.
Okay.
Because.
Just wondering. All right.
Yeah.
Right?
It's dead time otherwise.
It is dead time. Well, something, you know, either we move these up or we move our planning commission meetings back. And quite honestly, depending on what's on the agenda, it might be to our advantage to have it immediately after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm ready.
I'm ready too.
Okay. I call the Planning Commission special meeting of August 4th to order. Roll call, please.
Okay. Planning Commissioner Bernadetti?
Here.
Commissioner Wallace?
Here.
Vice Chair Marks?
Here.
Chair Kerger?
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Lou?
Yes.
Will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
That's my second one since I took the video.
Yeah, no.
Thank you.
It's really smart because you'd be totally trapped back here.
Yeah.
What?
Well, they took out the pass key.
Oh, yeah.
Opening for the door, so I don't know if that means it's permanently locked or.
No. Can't get out.
Scary,
you can get in, but you can't get. You have to go out through that door because this one has a lock too. So in case there's a fire, that exit.
She can come in, but
oh,
not
you can
out.
Get out. Oh, you can get out. Or you can get out. Yeah, look at that.
Well, it makes sense because otherwise you're
Why?
Trapped up here. Yeah.
Yeah, what if there's a fire
you'd
there?
You'd have to fob it. Someone with a gun, you'd be like, ah!
Oh, please. Okay.
Knock on wood, Jeannie. Jesus.
All right.
I'm just saying.
Okay. Cindy, I think that we're ready.
Okay, great.
We have two applications currently for the Housing Advisory Committee to replace two existing members with two-year terms. We have two interviews scheduled this evening, and I'll go ahead and call up our first interviewee.
I know you could ask. B&B Motors. Hi.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm great. Nice to be here. Nice to meet you all.
It's nice to have you. We don't have both of them in at the same time. Are we going to have both of them in at the same time?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We don't want you to know the questions in advance.
Yes. That's like peeking. That's like peeking.
You can hear from outside.
It's a surprise.
Again, we're delighted that you're here and that you've applied. And we have a series of five questions to ask you.
Okay.
And you may take your time because we have till 7 o'clock. So, please, we will start with Commissioner Benedetti.
Before I ask my canned question, I have an uncanned question for you.
Okay.
After I say good evening. What is Bachelor of Science in Industrial Technology?
Not a degree that I have.
Not the wrong one.
The next one.
Oh, sorry.
Keep them coming. That's an excellent, excellent question.
And she would be happy to answer that after.
I'll make it up for you if you'd like.
No, Corey.
No, that's okay.
Corey.
Okay.
It's Corey.
Yes, thank you. Sorry, I just took them in the order that they were in my packet. That was wrong of me. Okay, Corey, good evening. Could you please briefly tell us about yourself and your interest in affordable housing?
Sure. Sure. So I am a practicing real estate attorney. I practice at a boutique law firm in San Francisco called Vogel Meredith Burke. My interest in, I think, all things real estate stems from my practice in this area starting in about 2001 forward. I'm very active in an organization called the Urban Land Institute, which is very focused on the responsible use of land for all the things that we need land for: housing, recreation, industrial, commercial, retail, office, all the things that we use land for. Affordable housing is obviously a major component of that. And obviously, it's not just affordable housing. It's housing to fit every economic bracket in our culture. One of the things that's been a major focus in San Francisco is we seem to be dealing with affordable housing, and we're dealing with market rate housing, i.e. housing for the wealthy aspect of the community, and we're leaving out the middle. We're leaving out our middle income housing as well. So, you know, to your question, I'm interested in affordable housing. I'm interested in making sure that in this city we have housing available for every component of the people that live here.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hi. My question is unfortunately a compound question, so hopefully as a lawyer you won't find it too objectionable. The first part of the compound question is, do you believe that there is an affordable housing crisis in our community? Second part, why or why not? Which means you can't avoid answering the first part of the question either.
Are you an attorney?
Yeah.
Okay. Do I think there's an affordable housing crisis in our community? I do not know the answer to that question. I do not know the answer to that question. What I know is that the new housing that's being developed in the Windermere area of San Ramon, where I reside, and in the Gale Ranch area, and in the area that is still to be developed, that's within the Gale Ranch area, mm-hmm. is not the kind of housing that people in our workforce can afford. It's upper middle income housing. It is the kind of housing that is going to be serving a lot of the upper echelons of our society, which in many respects is fine. I mean, I think that that's a large part of what we're doing here in San Ramon. We're a bedroom community. We do, however, need to be supporting things like workforce housing. I think that needs to be a component of the housing that we built. The one of the things that I like very much about the Windermere area where I live is that we do have all along Bollinger Canyon an area of higher density housing that I understand was designed to be workforce housing. I also understand that there's been an issue with demand for that housing. There's not enough people that are wanting to live in those areas, so there have had to be some adjustments that have had to be made to the income levels of people who may live there. I haven't researched that issue in particular, but I do think that, you know, making sure that we have affordable housing in our community and in every community is important. Did I answer your question?
Sort of. We have a housing development that was approved on the west side of town called Afria Preserve.
Okay.
And 28% of the housing units in that area are for affordable housing. And we currently have on our docket an apartment complex down where the Outpost property is at the corner of Deerwood and San Ramon Valley Boulevard.
Okay.
Where there's also, obviously, there'll be a component of affordable housing. As you know, as a real estate attorney, the California Supreme Court upheld inclusionary housing ordinances in the City of San Jose case.
Right.
We, as a city, don't have an ordinance as of yet, but we do have a policy requiring 25% of units, assuming that the development is above a certain size, be affordable, of which a percentage has to be built, and then a percentage may be a fee in lieu of actual building. So the city has made affordable housing, as defined by income levels, a significant part of our overall housing policy. In our current housing element, the state in its wisdom require us to have over 1,000 units of what they define as affordable housing in the city, which, as you know, except where you are, which is planned by the county, our city is pretty much fully built out. So it's always a challenge to find housing to begin with and affordable housing on top of that. And the Housing Advisory Committee is sort of the first stop for people wishing to develop property for residential uses in San Ramon. And they've always been a strong advocate of making sure that all income levels are served. And it typically is the lower income levels that sort of get left out in San Ramon because of the incredibly expensive homes we have, which is sort of concomitant with the higher income levels we have here too. So that the Housing Advisory Committee has always been a strong advocate for affordable housing in the city.
I think that is excellent. That is frankly what I would expect from a Housing Advisory Committee. I'm assuming that the 1,000 units you're talking about has to do with the Sustainable Communities Initiative.
It has to do with our housing element. Currently, each municipality in California is required to update their housing element, which is a required part of their general plan every 8 years. It used to be 5, but now it's been extended to 8. And this past June, our housing element was certified by the state, so we're good to go through 2023. And so that's one of the things that the Planning Commission does with input from the Housing Advisory Committee, is to try and plan for housing in the city, including affordable housing. And it's always fun to deal with developers over affordable housing.
You know, what I can tell you, I represent developers and I deal with developers who are not my client on a nearly daily basis through my work through Urban Land Institute, one of the things that I hear repeatedly from builders that build multifamily and single family homes is, if you want to have affordable housing, I'll build it for you. I'm in the building business. I want to build things. I want to build great communities. It has to pencil. My project has to pencil economically. You're going to get less pushback on your affordable housing requirements if I don't have to go through a 10-year planning process, because I'm funding all the attorney's fees and the planning fees and everybody else's fees as we go through. And the less entitlement risk I have, the more affordable housing I'm willing to build for you and for the community. The Sustainable Communities Strategy was something that I alluded to earlier. This is SB 375. People are talking about Plan Bay Area and One Bay Area. I was at we presented a program about that where Ezra Rappaport of ABAG was speaking. And one of the things that he spoke with that really kind of resounded with me was, when we're talking about planning for our future, there are people that are coming. They are coming. We cannot stop them. There are new households that are coming up because we have population aging. People's kids are growing up and they're establishing their own households. So one of the things that we're trying to do statewide is build what he referred to as complete communities. We want to have places within every city, every town, where everyone is taking on a piece of this growth, so that we don't have everybody flooding to Oakland or flooding to Walnut Creek, or flooding to San Francisco. We want to have that growth dispersed throughout the Bay Area. So I think that the affordable housing is part of, it's part of the complete communities strategy. You know, the very concept that you could get a private developer to be putting in 28% affordable units when the city's suggestion is 25 is tremendous. And I think it speaks well to not only the city's being able to communicate that objective, but also make the process viable for the developer to meet or exceed those numbers.
Thank you.
Excuse me, is the air conditioning on?
Yes.
Thank you. That's all the hot air coming from this side of the table.
You just stole
so
my joke.
So far.
Thank you, Lou.
Commissioner Marks.
Yes, Ms. Edwards, thanks for coming. I was a member of ULI for many years, and
fantastic.
So my question should be relatively easy for you to answer, but I'd like you to go into some depth with your answers, and the question is, what do you see as the biggest impediments to creating affordable housing in San Ramon?
I think the biggest impediment to affordable housing here is the same impediment that we have throughout California, which is fear. It's been my experience that people that are in the Planning Commission, city government, other public officials understand that affordable housing is absolutely essential. If we do not have a place for our workforce to live, we wind up with horrific commutes, we wind up with not being able to find somebody to wait our tables when we want to go out for a nice dinner. I think that public officials really get that, and we understand that affordable housing We understand that people that are going to live in affordable housing are not necessarily dangerous, scary people. When I say that fear is a major impediment, I think that when we talk about affordable housing, people think back to New York City projects. And we think of these high density, dangerous, scary, terrifying environments that are not only physically dangerous to us as people, but they drag down the ever important property value of people that live around the affordable housing. I think affordable housing has come a long way since the 70s and 80s. I don't think that the perception of affordable housing has necessarily caught up. One of the things, as an example, when I say that it hasn't caught up, there have been a number of articles that I've read in different ULI publications over the last 10 years that have been talking about different strategies for affordable housing. And I think what we have found that works best is that we don't have a pocket of affordable housing. We don't have a pocket of Section 8. It's all over the place. And I think that does two things. One is it stops this perception of us against them. It's no longer, you know, the affordable housing people are over there and we don't go there because it's dangerous and they're horrible and they're lesser than people. They're lesser than we are. The people who are living in the affordable housing become our neighbors and our friends. And I think that's helpful for us in terms of figuring out how we include those people, and we create better housing, we create better jobs, we have a more inclusive community. But from the perspective of the people who are receiving the affordable housing and the benefits that provides to them, it gives them ownership, it gives them pride of being part of this community. We're not isolating them, pushing them to the side and saying, this is where the wealthy live in our community, and you have to be over there.
What other impediments do you see?
Other than the fear?
Than fear.
There's the economic reality of for the people that are going to be building the housing. I think that the major impediment from a financial perspective is the carrying cost and the entitlement risk that developers are necessarily going to face. I think the question is, how do my numbers pencil out if I build 28% affordable housing into this little infill project? I think another impediment to affordable housing is, how does it fit in with your existing city plan? For instance, if we're dealing with putting a infill project in on a particular corner where there has been an empty field, and right now we have, you know, nothing there, and we've got an existing wealthy neighborhood, are the people going to scream if you say, I'm going to put in a four-story building that's going to have 150 units in it, and 30% of them are going to be affordable? I think the impediment you're going to face from those people is, if you put in a high-density project in my neighborhood, it's going to take my property value. The answer is no. And so you are going to have pushback from those people in the community. I don't think these are insurmountable things. I think that it is dealt with through outreach.
Thank you.
Good answers.
Thank you.
All right, my question. What would be your approach to dispel some of those common stereotypes associated with affordable housing that you just described?
The question is, what is my approach?
Yeah. You talk about outreach?
Yes, I'm trying to think about how to phrase this. I mean, the solution, I think the stock answer for what the solution is to build engagement, build consensus,
right,
educate, get people to understand that affordable housing, high-density housing, is not necessarily going to be bad, badly done. Affordable housing, badly done density, can be a problem. But your question is about how to do the outreach. And I will confess to you that I'm not altogether sure how you do the outreach. I know that there is a San Ramon City newsletter that comes out on a regular basis, and I know that it's well done, and I know that I read it. I would like to have a sense of how many other people read that publication.
Well, we all do.
At least four.
So that's one way to do the outreach. I think another way to do the outreach is to use nights like we have tonight, the National Night Out. It's a great opportunity. We've got, obviously none of you are visiting my neighborhood this evening because you're talking to me, but in the past, Mayor Abramson has come to my neighborhood and has had conversations with people about issues that matter in our town. I think that getting out into the world at times of the year that are not election season, when I think people are not receptive to the information, I think that's one way to do it. I don't know that a door-to-door campaign necessarily gets you over the hump, but I think the outreach needs to be done.
Do you think, and just to extend that question, do you think that is a one-sided approach to the stereotype and dispelling it? You know, you just mentioned outreach. How do you think the community should try to gain knowledge?
One, I think the conversation starts as one-sided. Two, I think that the message has to be compelling enough to get the people in the community to want to learn more. They need to follow up. They need to be receptive to the information. Once they are engaged, you start to be able to have productive conversations that allow us to advance the ball. But until people are willing to come forward and say, my concern with affordable housing is that it's 2 miles from my house and it's going to disrupt my property value, what are you going to do about that? Until you have that kind of a conversation, it is kind of a one-sided issue, and part of it is, you know, are you just sending information out there into the ether that nobody's going to read because nobody cares about it? So I think you do have to bring that message to people, and you have to, the message that you are sending has to be the thing that they care about. And that, I think, is different in every aspect of our community.
Thank you. Okay, here's five.
Yeah. Get back to the last point that Chairperson Kerger raised. Usually the issue about affordable housing comes up when there's a project proposed.
Yes.
And it's the people who live in the immediate adjacent areas who are the ones concerned about it. And I've always felt that one of the ways to deal with the perceptions, because we see it all the time, every time we've had any housing project come up, that, you know, it surfaces. But if you think about it, affordable housing is based on income levels, and when you do the brackets for the income levels and figure out who fits into those brackets, for a lot of those brackets, you're talking about school teachers, you know, firemen, people like that. It's not the drug dealers that people are always worried about. So that's,
well, it's a face of the community, right, that we're trying to, right, get people to acknowledge.
Yes.
And that's it.
Did you want to?
Well, I was just going to add to that, because affordable, I think the attitude changes a bit when we say that component's going to be maybe for the seniors. And the two different, you know, they're two different, it could be the same affordable, but if it's senior housing, it takes on a different look and feel as in regards to acceptability.
I don't know. We really need.
Yeah. Anyway.
Number five. Sort of look at this as a closing argument. What do you feel is the most important contribution you can make as a member of the committee?
The thing that I bring to this discussion is, one is an academic understanding of some of the issues, and I can bring to the committee, and hopefully through recommendations to this board, what some of the challenges are that affordable housing or middle income housing or however you want to characterize it, it's housing for the non-wealthy among us. Urban Land Institute is an organization that I am deeply immersed in, and ULI studies affordable housing and publishes books on affordable housing and publishes articles, and I read them all. So in many ways, I can bring that perspective. In many ways, it's an academic perspective, but from that sightline, I can say, this is the way that Charlotte, North Carolina has been dealing with affordable housing issues. And this is what's worked for them, and this is what has not worked for them. And Hunter's Point is being completely redeveloped, and they've just completely demolished all the affordable housing that was on the top of the hill, and they've dealt with issues like street design to stop the development of weird pockets among their affordable housing recipients. Apart from that, I also bring the practical perspective. I bring the developer perspective. I've got a wonderful relationship with any number of real estate developers who I have social conversations with in meetings all the time. And if I'm about to make a recommendation, or we've been tossing around an idea, I have the ability to pick up the phone and ask my friendly real estate developer, what do you think about this? If I were to tell you that I've got a 2-acre parcel, infill development in San Ramon, and it's going to take you 2 years to get through the entitlement process, and I want you to build such and such, you know, percentage of affordable housing, what's your knee-jerk response to that? And depending on the reaction I get, I can go deeper. So I do have those resources. So I guess the answer to your question is I got the academic perspective, I've got the practical resources, and I've got the ability to ask the people who build this stuff, which I hope and which I believe gives me kind of a unique perspective.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And you will be hearing in the next week or two.
That's great.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Okay.
No, you can sit here. We're interviewing. You have to be quiet. You can sit and listen. They're hack people.
Okay. That's why he's here, right? No, I know.
No, Wendy's.
I know. Good morning, I mean, good afternoon, good evening, whatever part of the day it is, Mr.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming and, more importantly, for applying.
Okay.
The process is that we have five different questions to ask you.
Okay.
And we'll give you an appropriate amount of time to answer them. Okay. And afterwards, you will be hearing from the city as to the results of tonight's interview.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you. And with that, Commissioner Benedetti will ask you the first question.
Sure, go ahead.
Can I, good evening.
Good evening, Tom.
What did you study when you, what is industrial technology?
Industrial technology is a process engineering, like sugar factories, paper industries, and all those things, they use process.
Yeah.
So that's belong to industrial technology in Pakistan.
Oh, so is it kind of a cross between chemical and mechanical?
Chemical and mechanical. So if I come over here, I have got an admission over here in Indiana for chemical engineering, but I didn't pursue.
Good for you. Okay. I'm a chemical engineer, so I had to.
Sure.
Okay. So my question to ask is, can you please briefly tell us about yourself and your interest in affordable housing?
Okay. I've been here in California since 91, and I have been in car business since 97. Before, when I moved to California, I opened a restaurant in Dublin on Village Parkway. It's a franchise from Texas called Two Pesos.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it was like a kind of different atmosphere. I have gone through the city for the approval and everything. I know the process, what goes in it and everything. And then we were there, and after that, then I started a car business in Oakland, and then I moved to Dublin. I used to own a lot right at the corner of the Doherty, where the office depot is. It's called B&B Motorsports. So then last year I decided to retire because a lot of things are going on. So I was doing real estate beside that too. So I was selling foreclosure homes for Wells Fargo. So I need to know a lot of people how they feel when they have the foreclosure properties and everything. So dealing with those people to help them out, because at that time bank was compensating those people all those money to move out and everything. So I helped a lot of people because it was like a big territory all over from here to San Jose. I have been working with Wells Fargo for 4 years. Yeah.
And what is your interest in affordable housing?
The interest in affordable housing, because since now I'm retired, I have time, so I can work something out. If I can go help people and see what is there in it, if I can go do more research and think how the other cities are doing in the following, so we can follow up those things and try to help. And this thing is need to put like some quota system in this new development, so then the people, when they are developing the new properties, they should put something for the affordable housing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Good evening. My question is actually in two parts, so I'm going to slow this down. The first part is, do you believe there is an affordable housing crisis in our community? And the second part of the question is, why or why not?
I'm not sure about that how is critical situation over here is, because I've been looking for a lot of people, like a couple of employees of mine, they were trying to get some affordable housing because they are renting some places over here. So in like some of the Windermere or the Gale Ranch portion over there, and they apply for those and they have a lot of waiting for that. I think there is a crisis on that.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Excuse me, I was taking notes. What do you see as the biggest impediments to creating affordable housing in San Ramon? What are the biggest obstacles or impediments?
Yeah, because San Ramon is the housing prices are going so high, and it's hard to find a place where the developer will put that low-cost housing for affordable housing people, since they can make more money out if they put the regular. But this, once the city try to put some limits on it, that they have to allow that some certain percentage of their project, so that will help on that. So that is the main issue right now. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
What would be your approach to dispel some of the common stereotypes associated with affordable housing?
Most of the time, so we have to convince those builders and complete those things, and then the project wise, because I know there is not that many places like open space over here to develop new projects, because some of the lands is there in it, but I think I saw there's a new development coming up next to that on the corner of Bollinger and Crow Canyon further up. Yeah, because I was there in the planning department a couple of weeks ago looking for some property over there. Because we have Islamic Center over here in the center, and we're trying to find a property for that land or something. It's kind of scary because there was a project in that. They have some, I think, church kind of thing put aside for the religious facility or something. So, and then that's the thing.
Okay.
The last question is sort of a general question. That is, what do you feel is the most important contribution you can make as a member of the Housing Advisory Committee?
Yeah, I can try to reach out to the builders and whatever they in the process, and then we can develop some plans accordingly, because I've done some research with the other communities, like planning departments. They have some issues in this kind of thing that they're trying to find out. So they have some they have restrictions some places to put it, that this much should be there in it, otherwise then their project won't be approved. But you can't put it, you have to give them some incentives in order to develop that, so city should compensate some way, so they can be more leaning towards to give you a chance to develop a place for that.
Thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to say to us before we end?
No, I'm fine. So if you have any question, I can
Nope, that was the last one.
Sure, no problem.
So thank you very much.
Welcome.
And you should be hearing shortly.
Sure, no problem.
Thank you. Thank you for the
Welcome.
Application.
No thank you. Okay, thank you.
She's got the ballots.
It's okay. Two people.
Those are the two.
Okay. Ballots.
I do have the ballots.
Sure you do.
Thank you.
What?
I
goes to Cindy. Thank you. Send this all back to her. Thank you. Thank you, Cindy.
What?
What?
I forget exactly how Debbie or Phil typically does this, but we have a recommendation from the commission to the city council for Corey Edwards to fulfill a two-year term. That was a unanimous recommendation. And we have two people who have recommended nomination of Kasim to serve also a two-year term, but I guess considering that it's two out of four votes, I'm not certain where we would go from there.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
This process is such that there's no discussion between the commissioners, but in situations like this, what is the history? Have we had public discussion of applicants before?
We don't typically. For Kasim, who only received two of the four votes, which is not
a
majority.
That's right.
We could either take a re-vote or.
We are going to have more applicants, I'm assuming.
Right. The vacancies are still open until filled, and so if there is no majority vote for a member this evening, that vacancy will remain open until filled.
Okay. I mean, we definitely could re-vote, but my thing is let's see how many more applicants we get, and the next go around there might be more.
Okay.
And still leave his application available.
Sure. What I'll do is I'll carry the unanimous nomination forward to the city council.
Right.
And then we will continue to recruit, and we can always take another vote with the other candidates that are available in a couple weeks.
Okay. Thank you. Is that agreeable to everyone?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Cindy. Thank you. Okay, you got 10 minutes.
All right.
Okay.
There's seven. That's low.
I am calling the August 4th Planning Commission meeting to order. Roll call.
Planning Commissioner Bernadetti?
Here.
Planning Commissioner Wallace?
Still here.
Planning Commissioner Marks?
Here.
Chair Kerger?
I'm here.
Thank you.
Okay, Pledge of Allegiance. Cindy. Let's do staffers tonight.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. There are no public comments. I don't have any cards for that. Anyone in the audience wishing talk about anything other than what's on the agenda tonight, please fill out a card Okay, I don't see that, so let's move on. Additions and revisions?
Chair Kerger.
Thank you. 6.1, minutes from the July 21st meeting.
I'd like to pull them, please.
Pulled. Okay. Let's go over.
Okay. At line 110 on page 3, at the conclusion of the last review we had of the Outpost Windmill Farms site, I requested that the developer for the next meeting provide perspectives that were at the same level of detail as the ones we've already seen showing the San Ramon Valley Boulevard frontage. I wanted them to show the side and rear as they intend to build it out. And I additionally asked, in relation to a comment that Commissioner Wallace brought up, where he indicated that a play area needed to be included in the project, I asked that a dimensioned plan view be included that showed dimensions, location, and the amenities that were proposed. I have no objection to a site improvement plan, but I really would like to see a plan view of the play area and perspectives drawn to the same level of detail that we saw initially. And that was what we approved during the meeting. The minutes could be amended to include that.
Okay.
Through the chair,
yes.
My question is for Commissioner Marks. Do you want me to go back and revise them and bring them back, or do you prefer that I go make the changes and I do publish them?
As long as you state specifically perspectives at the same level of detail
okay.
as the others and a plan view showing dimensions, location, and amenities, I don't need to see it again. I can
okay.
rely on staff.
Okay, thank you very much.
Are there any other changes? Okay.
I move that we approve the minutes as amended here on the dais by Commissioner Marks.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you. And again, that will be online, the revised.
Once I go ahead and make the, I'm going to have to go back and listen to the tape, but I will go ahead and make the changes, and once I make my changes, I send it over to Rose Coe, and she publishes it normally within the same day.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There are no continued items after closing of a public hearing. We go to 8.1, Wendy's Restaurant. Staff, Cindy.
Great, thank you very much. I'm just going to prepare a brief staff report on the application before you this evening. The Wendy's proposed drive-through and restaurant business was first discussed at the July 21st Planning Commission meeting. And at that first public hearing, the applicant went through their proposal, and there was additional discussion amongst the commission requesting more information related to the traffic and circulation proposal. Because of the time constraints to get back to this meeting this evening and to be able to prepare all the information that was necessary, the applicant has requested that the public hearing be continued to August 18th to give both the applicant as well as staff an opportunity to further evaluate the traffic circulation and answer the questions that the commission has posed. So this evening we still have a public hearing because the application was continued to a date certain. The recommendation is to hold the public hearing this evening and then close it and continue the discussion to August 18th.
Okay. Cindy, in the staff report, it says in background and discussion, it should read on July 21st.
21st, right.
Okay. All right. Okay. Are there any questions of staff?
Yes, thank you, Chairwoman Kerger. I just wanted to make sure, Cindy, that when on the staff report on page 2 in her background, you say that they're gathering additional information on the site's drive-through queuing and circulation plan, that that also included loading.
It does. So circulation for both the trucks as well as the vehicular circulation.
And then I just have a clarifying question. I would have sworn when I might have been one of the people up here who brought this up, that his response was that a circulation plan had already been performed. And I remember looking over at Shanae and saying, well, we don't have it in our packet. Had one not been performed?
No. So with this particular application, there was a traffic and circulation plan. That study was conducted and submitted to our traffic engineers. So typically, you know, the counts and movements of vehicles, all of that technical information is given to our traffic engineers, and they have reviewed and evaluated that. There were several versions of it that had gone back and forth with our traffic engineers and comments that they had provided for modifications to that study, but it is complete. They are going to expand on that because of the questions that were asked on July 21st. I've been told that they are going to actually go to other Wendy's locations and do counts and information, gather information on the queues that at other locations. And so it's going to take time for them to actually go and do those counts at the other locations.
Oh, okay, I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, just kind of like piggybacking on to that question, is it not part of the packet then that we could receive if there's some changes? Because quite definitely some of us have some concerns about that report, and I think it's really imperative that we have all of the information. And certainly we know that traffic department has gone through it and reviewed it, but that still negates that we might have some additional questions, and without seeing the report, we can't adequately ask. So
what,
if you could.
Yeah, we'll attach the original traffic study. The applicant is preparing, their traffic engineer is preparing the revisions to, or the additional information that was requested, and they'll be providing an update to their traffic and circulation plan with his response, and then our traffic engineers will also respond to their new analysis that they're providing us. So there's a couple of different layers that have to that will be included with your staff report.
Okay. Any other questions of staff? If not, I'm going to open the public hearing, and I have only one card if anyone else wishes to speak. I have Robert Klinger.
Good evening. My name is Robert Klinger. I'm a resident of San Ramon. I'm here tonight to talk about some work that I did in the month of July having to do with Wendy's. I think one thing that happens when we come before the Planning Commission is we try to get a lot of information, but it's not necessarily quantitative, and you don't have a lot of supporting documentation. It's people in the community talking, and a lot of the information that I hear, and it's hearsay, is favorable towards Wendy's. But I thought I would undertake a project, and it was to do an informal survey. So I emphasize informal. This wouldn't pass my exams. I used to do a lot of surveys in graduate school. But I wanted to put together to have the Planning Commission get a feel. And going into the survey, which I describe in the report that I submitted, I didn't know what the results would be. You can't predict those things. You just talk to a lot of people. The folks, I estimated there were 60 businesses in the general area, vicinity of where Wendy's would be located, but I could only talk to about 50. I sort of ran out of time, but I think it provides accurate information and information that's helpful. So the way the survey was conducted, these folks are very, very generous with their time. So I got into the office and got into the buildings and I walked around and I was never restricted. I could talk to each and every person. People were hammering on tires, taking out engines from cars, all kinds of things like that. And I could speak to all of them as long as I was patient and sort of respectful of their time. So that's how the survey was conducted, and 50 businesses in July. And I listed the types of businesses. You folks are probably familiar with them, but a lot of repair shops. There's a paint store over there, consulting firms, a recycle center. I talked to three restaurants out of five. I didn't get to the last two. There's an artist gallery, beauty salon, flower shop, and so on. So the key thing I wanted to mention, too, is I look at that area as being very vibrant and growing. So I think it's kind of the folks probably own some of the property or it's low rent, but they're there and they're successful. And they have a community, a really pretty tight-knit community. The businesses get along and they really, really value their location. So with that in mind, I went and talked to these 50 businesses and I summarize on page 4. Out of 261 persons that I talked to, the overwhelming majority had heard of Wendy's restaurant. So I was sort of surprised about that. I never had to describe in too much detail. I just said Wendy's and everyone knew what I was talking about. There were 7 persons total that probably had no opinion, no comment. They were too busy, and so I didn't pay too much attention to them. But overwhelming majority had some impression or knowledge of Wendy's. A very high majority of the persons that I interviewed, 215 persons out of 261, which is 82%, had a positive feeling with regards to Wendy's in terms of their employees. So it's the impact on the owners, the managers, and employees. So I summarized a lot of the things that you that were told to me, and I put little exclamation points, because people said it with enthusiasm. They love Wendy's and so on. So I wanted to sort of carry that forward. Some of them were more just, they have decent salads, or it's a pretty nice restaurant. They were just general comments. But there's a lot of folks that really, I felt that there was a lot of enthusiasm from the majority of people. So I was kind of surprised about that. I didn't think it would be that many people. On page 5, a high majority of the businesses. Second part of the survey was, you have a business here, and now Wendy's is coming to your neighborhood, to your location. What does that really mean to you? And so mostly this is the managers that we're talking, or the owners. And a high majority, that was 33 businesses out of 50 that I interviewed, said that they felt like having Wendy's in their neighborhood would provide benefits. And you can read all the items on 5, what people said. It would eliminate cross-town traffic was a big item. And
Robert, let me ask you. We can all read this survey, and I really do appreciate the time and effort that you've put into it. But let me ask you, do you think that the result of this survey is a positive thing? The people were positive for Wendy's. You think if they were enthused about it, that's the general consensus, correct?
Yeah, they were enthused as employees or owners because they would, I suspect that based on their comments, they would be over there. Okay. It's close by. They would walk to that place. And then for the businesses, which is the second part, they really looked at having more traffic in general in the neighborhood brings them more customers, and they're very positive about that. So that's the second aspect of it.
Okay, and are you going to, or have you given this survey to Wendy's, since I know you know them?
If they were here, I would provide a copy.
All right.
I made it clear to each business I went to, I'm not associated either directly or indirectly with Wendy's. They don't pay me. I'm not a consultant. I just happened to use their restaurant when I was an employee of AT&T. I mentioned that publicly on the last meeting. And I think having, if it was Jack in the Box or if it was Jersey Mike's or anything else, I'd be doing the same thing. If something is there that's a benefit to the employees or it's a benefit to the businesses, I'd do exactly the same thing. Okay. I don't really care that much about Wendy's. So.
Commissioner Benedetti.
Thank you. Mr. Klinger, so you went out and did the survey to gather information from the businesses and employees. Now, you've done a good job of reporting what's your informal survey. My question really is, what did you think? Or the survey summary was positive.
Sure.
Did that surprise you? What are your feelings about a Wendy's coming to that location?
Well, I have been very supportive, strictly from the point of view of the impact on traffic. We're all faced with different things happening in the area, more homes, possibly more businesses. And in this instance, for all the people that live on the Northwest and the people from Twin Creeks, if you stay over on this side of the freeway, if you don't use Crow Canyon, that's a big, big deal. Actually, that's one of the key reasons, if not the only reason, I sort of undertook this. These folks there primarily can walk to that location. The kids that get off school, they come from Iron Horse and they get off the buses and they go to In-N-Out Burger and they go to McDonald's. But they can walk down if they're really big fans. They can walk down to the location where Wendy's will be. So it sort of is an additional facility that would be popular with young folks, and a safe environment. And so my interest really is the traffic thing. If people can go directly to that, don't have to go to Carl's Jr., don't have to come over to Habit, keep over there, then you reduce a lot of traffic on Crow Canyon.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Klinger. Does anyone have any other questions of Mr. Klinger? Anyone else wishing to speak on this in public comment? If not, close the public comment.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. We are going to be continuing this until the 18th.
Do we need motion to do that?
I would like to move that we continue the Wendy's restaurant and drive-through at 222 San Ramon Valley Boulevard to our next regularly scheduled meeting, which is currently scheduled for August 18th.
Do I hear a second?
I would second that.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Are there any liaison reports? None? Okay. This meeting is adjourned.
Great. Fantastic. Good job.